Welcome to the Onyx Pathcast. I am one of your hosts, Dixie Cochran, here with Matthew Dawkins.
Hello.
And Eddie Webb.
Hello.
Full disclosure, we just recorded 20 tight minutes about Midwinter and some other stuff, and then lost them because the internet sucks sometimes.
Yes.
Technology today.
So, we have another lost segment of an episode because that makes us mysterious and interesting.
One day they'll be found, and when we're famous beyond belief, there'll be people digging through the ruins of the internet for those recordings.
Like those Doctor Who episodes they discovered in like a vault somewhere a while back. That was a whole thing.
Yeah, I remember those.
They often seem to be found in African BBC stations. Those lost Doctor Who episodes, because obviously the BBC had the World Service, and a lot of African nation specific studios where Doctor Who was very popular being repeated, and so they were stuck in archives in places like Uganda and Zimbabwe and Rhodesia, as was, and have just been mothballed in there, and they just keep arising from the dust when someone unearths a studio.
Well, that's what our episode's going to be about this week. Finding lost episodes of television shows from the 60s and 70s. No, actually, it's going to be about a little bit of a Midwinter recap, because our episode that we dropped, we were at Midwinter, was recorded on Thursday.
Thursday.
So we'd only been at Midwinter for a day at that point. So it was more of like an announcement hangout episode. It was fun to record around the table. But since then, we experienced all of Midwinter. And so now we can talk about that. Also, some of our plans for the year as far as Onyx Path goes. Nothing super secret. No big announcements that you didn't hear on the Midwinter one. So you can turn this off now, really. But but I'd like you to keep listening. Yeah. Sorry. We like lost all our momentum from the last episode. And now I feel really weird because we had a really cool anecdote at the beginning and it was all this stuff. And now I'm like, oh, no.
Okay. Well, let's do this. Let's do this, Dixie. Let's build momentum by saying thank you. Obligatory wrestling reference. And you're the one that wanted it struck from the podcast. You are the cause of this. After all this time, it was Dixie all along. Anyway. What I was going to say is what all of us should do, if we can, obviously NDAs may prevent us from doing so, why don't we drop something into this podcast about an upcoming game? It could be a book that was announced last year, but something we have not spoken widely about so far. So it could be about Mummy, it could be about Contagion Chronicle, it could be about one of the upcoming Exalted books. It could be about Pirates of Pugmire. Just one of the ideas that's going to appear in one of those books that we haven't actually spoken about. If you can think, you know, if you can't think of any, then that's absolutely fine.
I'm not trying to think of like what I should or shouldn't drop. Yeah, Eddie, do you have anything off the top of your head? Do you want to drop like a Pirates of Pugmire thing?
I could do that too. We've talked a little bit about Pirates of Pugmire, but I mean, one of the things that actually was not in the podcast, but was on Matthew's kind of live from the show videos on his web stream and on the Onyx Path YouTube channel. So you should go check that out. But if you didn't check that out, we need to talk about the fact that Pirates of Pugmire is actually going to be, as far as we know, the first product where we're all working together in a creative capacity.
Yeah, true.
We talked about, you know, products for Dixie's editor.
Are you telling me the editing isn't creative?
Well, it depends on the developer, doesn't it? how creative your edits need to be.
That's fair. But okay, that's not what I meant, but you're correct. That was a poor choice of words.
I meant the fact that
we're all working together as writers, more or less.
Yeah.
Because I've written a little bit for Matthew. Is picking up some work count for me, and Dixie I hired immediately on the project. So it's the first time we're all collaborating at the writing level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, really fun, actually.
That is super fun. I am really excited about it. I'm also not quite done, but I'm working on it.
The other thing I wanted to chat about, is we haven't talked a ton about it a while, actually, is Legend Lore.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Legend Lore, we announced it at Gen Con, but we finally kind of got moving. We got some final contractual stuff sorted out. But it is based off a comic book that is now published by Caliber Comics. And it's a scenario where people from the real world, our world, get sucked into a fantasy environment and try to exist as D&D style characters. So we're actually making a fifth edition D&D source book to kind of play through that world. We have a friend of the podcast, Steffi Devan, is actually the developer for it. It's her first big development gig. So it's really exciting to kind of watch someone new, kind of try some new things. And also we've done a ton of fifth edition material, besides for Scarlands and a little bit of Pugmire. So it's some fresh voice. She's hiring a really diverse team for that. We're still getting contracts sorted out for that, so we can't announce who's on yet. But I'm really happy with what I saw this morning about the people that we want to bring on board. And it's just, you know, it's one of those cool projects that it's not, we don't talk about a ton because it's not one of the big, you know, game lines. But I mean, it's a neat little thing of how would you play yourself or a modern day person in this kind of fantasy world?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a fun thing. And like, just because it's not one of our big game lines right now doesn't mean it won't be. We don't know.
Exactly, right.
We don't know how well it's going to do. See, things I am excited about right now. So I'm going to preface this with an announcement for the podcast listeners. I played a game at Midwinter, y'all.
What? What?
In fact, I played two games at Midwinter.
What?
Touch thy mouth.
So, and a LARP, actually. So I did all kinds of stuff.
Oh my gosh.
I know, right? So the first thing I did was a playtest for Danielle Lazon, which was really fun, but I can't talk too much about it because it's not my game to announce. But it was based on Blades in the Dark mechanics, and we played it with a bunch of our developers, so that was really cool.
Me? You know, I was there.
I said a bunch of our developers. I wasn't... And yes, you me. Were there.
And also you.
You're one of our developers. You are included in that statement.
In the Venn diagram, Matthew, yeah. You are in the developer portion of the diagram.
I just want to be noticed.
I played a game with Danielle and Matthew and thank a couple you. Of our other developers.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who they were.
Okay.
I was not there. I just want to point that out too.
But sorry.
We're getting really specific about this.
No,
this is because the first take bombed.
I also went and I split half a grilled cheese with Megan. I mean, should I tell you the whole story? Like,
ooh,
tell us about the grilled cheese.
Megan and I split a grilled cheese. It was really good, but it was too big for one person. So we got that in a bowl of soup and then we split them. And yeah, it was really delicious. So
good.
Anyhow, Jesus Christ. The second game I played.
So yes, you're playing this great game with Danielle.
Yes, that was really fun. Anyway, the other game I got to play, which was what part of my announcement was going to be about, now you've ruined everything, was I got to play a playtest of Deviant the Renegades.
Ooh.
So Megan Fitzgerald ran that, and she was a fantastic storyteller. And then I got to play with Neil Price and then a couple of fans whose names have slipped my mind because I'm really bad at names, as you know. But I'll have some really good feedback going to Eric Zawadzki. From that, which is awesome, so that he can incorporate it. He also wrote the playtest in a pretty short amount of time, and it was really fun for that. It took place on a cruise ship.
Oh, nice.
Which was kind of cool, because I've never done an adventure on a cruise ship before, I don't think. That was kind of fun. But I got to kind of see the scope of the things you can do with Deviant the Renegades, which is something that we've kind of hinted at, kind of talked about, because it is about, you know, you were taken, you were changed. Whether that's with nanotechnology, whether you are a mutant of some sort, you know, you are essentially kind of like X-Men level, something's going on with you. So we had a character, the best character was Monster Nun. Monster Nun. She was a 68-year-old nun whose power was a Hulk-like transformation. Where became a giant monster with claws. I kept picturing the Rancor from Star Wars.
Right.
Because she went from size 5 to size 10, all this other stuff. But of course, because it's Deviant, because it's a Chronicles of Darkness game, there are drawbacks to this. It's not a superhero game. Right. So one of her, I think, drawbacks was that if she got into almost any kind of conflict, she couldn't control the transformation.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody was, like, you know, yelling at her or whatever, started arguing, like, she couldn't control it. And because it was a playtest, we, of course, all took dramatic failures constantly, just for fun.
Of course.
Like, oh, I failed? Oh, yeah, dramatic failure. Like, let's just screw this up. So I ended up shooting. My character ended up, I could teleport and I could make copies of myself that couldn't do very much, but at least they could, like, walk around and distract people. So, you know, good for, like, messing with cameras and things like that. But near the end, we had to go get on a helicopter pad and fly away, and I accidentally shot the helicopter. They failed very badly, and then it fell over. We took out the people we were supposed to take out in our mission, but also the cruise ship sank and like 2,900 innocent people died.
Wow.
So yeah, you know, all in all, a success.
So good old family fun, right?
Yeah. Exactly. We had a lot of fun playing. All the characters were really fun. There was somebody who could like snatch bodies, like he could go limp and go into somebody else's body, mm-hmm. Which was great when you're trying to get past security and stuff like that. Like he's the reason we got on the cruise ship in the first place because we did not have tickets. Nice. And then Neil's character could do a bunch of like hacking type stuff. He had an ability that essentially if he was not very skilled in something, he could roll as if he was. Although there were drawbacks to that as well, because he had like nanotech in his head.
Nice.
So yeah, so all of us had these really cool characters, really diverse range of characters, which I loved. And we all had our different reasons for wanting to take this guy out. Mm-hmm. But like we were working together to do it as a, you know, as a cohort. So it was really, really fun. I love seeing what Deviant can do, and I love that it can do so much with this system. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited to see that through. So that's kind of my like announcement sneak peek of Deviant is like you can do all these different things with it. I know that when Dave Brickshaw was first developing it, he did say like I want a game where you can play Buffy or you can play the Hulk or you can play Akira or you can play like all these different characters. Mm-hmm. And that's what the game looks like. Like there's a million different ways you can be a Deviant, but you're still fighting the same thing. You know, like people who either experimented on you or made you what you are or whatever. So yeah.
To be honest, that clarifies a lot for me because I can't say I know a great deal about Deviant, and it often takes recaps or of course playing a playtest to really solidify in my mind what a game is about and being able to hear about the different powers you can play with in a game like this and shading them in a horrific sense rather than a four color superhero sense is important, I guess, for embedding in my head what Deviant does.
Yeah, when we were playing, I'll be totally transparent here. Like we thought at first that Neil's character's power specifically was really broken because it seemed like he could just roll at a skill 3 on every skill. And we're like, that seems stupid, like wrong, you know? But Megan kind of explained to us there's a couple of the mechanics that we weren't playing with because it was a playtest. And so he would have been suffering very, very badly in an actual version of this game. For the playtest, we just kind of let it slide because it's a playtest. But she told us there were like two different mechanics that we weren't running with because it was a lot to deal with for a playtest. And with that stuff, you'd be, you know, suffering consequences, either physical or mental, when you use a lot of your powers.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So much like all of our games, you know, you win some, you lose some. But it was really fun. I'm super looking forward to it. And I mean, I've always kind of been looking forward to it, but I wasn't as excited about it as I am now that I've actually gotten to play it and see it a little bit more.
Well, I remember you've said to me before, you've always found you are the kind of person that has to do something to learn it. You know?
Yes.
You are a kinesthetic learner.
Yes, which is why I have so much trouble talking mechanics about all the games I've edited, because people will come and like try to ask me rules questions. And I'm like, oh, no, I just read the text. I didn't play it.
Yeah.
But I can talk very openly about, you know, like, the games I have played. Like I can explain Vampire the Masquerade, you know, mechanics fairly well. I can explain most Chronicles mechanics pretty well because I've played those games a little bit. So yeah.
Oh no, I'm really glad you got the opportunity.
Yeah. So what about you, Matthew? What's something that you're looking forward to this year or an announcement you want to drop?
Oh, okay. So what can we talk about? Seeing as I proposed this this preposterous idea. So there's a couple of things, I guess, that I'm excited about. A few things, I suppose, but I might go a little off the beaten track. Contagion Chronicle is one of the big ones, and also Chronicles of Darkness, of course. And I've spent a fair amount of time in development for good reason. It can be difficult to juggle a crossover game. And it's not necessarily about balance as much as incorporating enough ideas to appeal to a wide enough audience. Speaking pragmatically, I guess, from the market perspective, you have about as much chance of everyone buying it because every single game is represented in it to mm-hmm. nobody buying it because this game is only a tenth about my game, if you see what right. I mean.
Yeah.
So Contagion Chronicle is specifically built around forming your sworn and false factions, your groups of characters that have to be comprised of a vampire, a werewolf, a Promethean, a mage, or what have you, to get the best out of them. You could play a group of sworn who are all vampires, but you wouldn't gain nearly as many benefits as you would without working alongside creatures mm-hmm. of other origins. And one of my favorite things about this game that I've not talked about much because I've been so focused on those playable factions, their powers, the vectors as well, is what we do with the majority of the bulk of the rest of the book. And that is the different setting chapters. So something mm-hmm. that's been very popular in Chronicles of Darkness core books have been those little world chapters that fall near the end and give you snapshots into Tokyo and New York and wherever else. And you usually get about 4 or 5 pages per city. Mm-hmm. The Contagion Chronicle gives you more than that. And it wow. is basically to provide you with a playground wherever you like in the world. I think there's one on every single continent, including Antarctica. And if you are a fan of The Thing, John Carpenter movie, or its precursor, or its successor, then you will very much enjoy that chapter by Jose Garcia. So you have a different city in every single continent of the world. Every single one presents the contagion in a slightly different way. So you have things like a more mundane, depressive contagion that is starting to make mortals, and specifically mortals attached to the supernatural, suicidal, or at least prone to self-destructive behavior. And of course, this can be very dangerous if you're a vampire and you have touchstones who are suddenly realizing what you are, and it's having a deep and resonant toll on their mental health. Right. But all the way through to the contagion being something entirely supernatural, mutative, if that's a word. I don't think it is, but it can be now. Where you've got, I think, the domain of, I always use the word domain because I've played vampire too much, of Kyoto, which is where we introduce the Garayo, who are one of the antagonists in Werewolf the Forsaken. They are, I guess, co-introduced in Shunned by the Moon as a form of werewolf, I guess, more along the traditional lines of people who are infected and completely lose control, not just of their mind and temperament, but also of their bodies. And so your Garayo may possess multiple heads, like Geryon, like or Cerberus. They may possess excess limbs or excess organs, which is clearly a trend of mine because I did something similar in Promethean's Night Horrors.
Yeah, you did.
but the limb trees are less of an organized opposition, I would say. They're more just a desperate victim that you would be do well to put down.
Just to clarify, was that a game term a second ago, or were you saying Kyoto?
Kyoto. I was mispronouncing it horribly, so thank you for correcting me.
Well, I was doing it to correct you. I was literally doing it to clarify. You said like Kyoto, and I was like, is that a game thing? Like, I'm confused. Okay, cool.
No. I was just horribly anglicizing it.
That's fine. That's what British people do.
Yeah. Yes. The Americans, thank God for their reverence for language. And where
Fuck
would
Noah
we
Webster.
Be?
Noah Webster's a bastard.
We say bastard. Anyway.
Bastard.
So this is something I really want to do with Contagion Chronicle. I'm a big fan of campaign settings. It's something we've never really done with Chronicles of Darkness. We had the World of Darkness Chicago book for New World of Darkness way back when. And there was a New Orleans book for Vampire as well. But we haven't really done that for Chronicles of Darkness. So as well as Contagion Chronicle giving you all these powers and options for playing in sympathetic groups, you also have a whole slew of campaign settings that are detailed remarkably well. I have to give kudos to the writers because they did a fantastic job of making every single city in the book feel substantially different. Mm-hmm. And lacing them with plot hooks, which is always my agenda in every single book.
Yep.
So there is plenty to do and play with in Contagion Chronicle, and yeah, it's, as I say, it's something we haven't really spoken about before. But I've got one more. As I'm on a tear, I'm going to do a little bit more. And that's on Let the Streets Run Red. So this was the book I hadn't really planned on talking about, but it would be very easy to forget it, I guess, because it's a stretch goal to Chicago by Night. But the way it's coming together, and the way we don't often celebrate source books as much as we do core books. And Let the Streets Run Red is a Chicago Chronicles book, but it stretches beyond Chicago. The first chronicle set in Chicago. The second one is set in the wilds, the rural region of Indiana and Illinois. So you get a folk horror vampire chronicle out of that one. The third one is pits you between the rival domains of Milwaukee and Indianapolis. Indianapolis has never been covered in Vampire the Masquerade before, so we get to set up a brand new hierarchy there. And the final one takes you to the much beloved city of Gary, which is, I guess, the runt of the litter of those cities, and takes you all the way back to some of the characters that were introduced in the very first chronicle of for Vampire the Masquerade. But something I was speaking to Crystal Mazur about at Midwinter, who is one of our freelancers, she is writing the Milwaukee Indianapolis chapter. And this is still in its, I guess, gestating form at this point, so it is subject to change. But something we came upon quite nicely was we wanted to mirror image domains. Milwaukee is hardline Camarilla, more so than Chicago. The Gangrel Prince, Mark Decker, who's been there since Milwaukee by Night, runs it like a police state. Maybe because the Second Inquisition have performed enough persecuting activities in that region to make him do so.
Right.
And he loses something of value I won't go into at this point, but it ends up in Indianapolis. Indianapolis is a city that has fallen. Has it fallen to the Anarchs? Has it fallen to the Second Inquisition? That, I guess, was something we were trying to ascertain between Crystal and myself. And what we have decided on is this is going to be our first religious Anarch domain. Because Anarch domains are almost always presented in that free state manner, lots of gangs, lots of rebels, you know, people protesting in the streets, that sort of thing.
Bunch of punk kids,
Exactly. And we have to move with the times. We have to match it to how the city actually is in the real world. And we have to look at what clans comprise the Anarch movement in V5, and we fall upon the Ministry, who used to be the followers of Set. So if the Ministry are one of the three pillars of the Anarch movement, what happens when a city is run by the Ministry and they are Anarchs? And so we've got this wonderful evangelical idea of a cult running Indianapolis, and the other vampires, including other Anarch vampires, really not being terribly sure what to make of it, because this isn't your traditional brouhaha Anarch fiefdom. This is a religious body that has some terrible elements, but is also all about spiritual freedom.
That's really
free yourself from the Camarilla by giving your soul to the Setites. And yeah, we're having a lot of fun with that. So that's something I can drop here, and hopefully it will survive through to development, but I like the idea enough that I imagine it will.
Especially because you have the Cult of the Blood Gods book in your brain as well right now.
Right.
Yep, and hopefully we'll be putting the Church of Set in there as well.
Oh, nice.
I like the idea that the Ministry is, I guess, the holistic clan that was once known as the Followers of Set. That includes all those Hall of Jormungandr, the Daitya, the... Lord, I'm going to forget all of the various bloodlines now of the Followers of Set that were introduced in previous editions of Vampire. Right, but there are a lot of them. The Church of...
Wait. Did Matthew Dawkins just not have encyclopedic knowledge about something vampire-related?
I know. I will go and throw myself out the window.
He's been sick all week. Give him a break.
I mean, I just thought he had been replaced. Like, I'm not sure this is Matthew Dawkins, actually.
Oh, I see. So his whole being sick, quote-unquote, is actually just when his clone got made.
Well, you're talking, I remember the Serpents of the Light, the Witches of Echidna, and yeah. Anyway,
good.
So if you consider the Ministry,
okay, you're Matthew.
Whew. Yeah, he's back. If you assume that the Ministry is that big polytheistic cult, and maybe Sutek is the antediluvian, it doesn't really matter. They're not talking to him one on one. The Church of Set, which will be introduced in the Cults of the Blood Gods, is your Orthodox brand of ministers. That is the, I guess, the Setites people know and love. So if anyone was missing them from V20 and prior editions, they're not going away for very long. So, yeah, if you haven't been able to pick up the Anarch book for V5, then don't despair, because you will still get some lovely, lovely snake people in Cults of the Blood Gods.
Yay, snake people! That's awesome. There's a lot going on this year, huh?
Yeah, there is.
So, just to bounce back a little bit, was there anything else about Midwinter that either of you liked?
Actually, I do want to touch... You talked before about how playing a game helps you get a better understanding of it. And I actually had that moment because Matthew ran Prince's Gambit, the card game, for us at Midwinter. Michelle, my wife Michelle, came to the convention, and we had both played as part of the introductory video that we did for the Kickstarter, but that was like in very small pieces, like, you know, just to play through a round, and we played like small sections of it to kind of demonstrate the rules. We didn't actually play a full game from start to finish. So I thought I kind of understood the game, and then we actually played a game of it, and it is way better than actually I thought it was. I mean, I thought it was good, but it got really, really tense near the end. My wife was Sabbat, which is perhaps inevitable. Those of you who met Michelle are probably not surprised at all. I was Camarilla, and we were playing next to each other. And so, like, there was one point where we were both bidding to become prince, and it got really tense near the end. We like people were just piling prestige left and right, and it was, you know, lots of us, you know, arguing to our various allies at the table. Come on, I did good stuff for you. It was just a lot of fun. Matthew was Ventru, Danielle Lazon was La Sombra, her husband was Zmisi, which is just
Zmisi, yeah.
And they were randomly drawn, so it wasn't like intentional. And we had a couple of other fans coming in to play Tremere and Ravnos. I played Malkavian, Michelle played Nosferatu, and Krista Mazur played what was Follower Set?
Setite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just interesting because one of the things we noticed is that if you understand the Vampire the Masquerade canon, it actually slightly hinders your ability to play the game because you're like, oh, well, I can't trust you because you're a Sabbat clan or an independent clan and you're sitting on this permission council. And it's like, actually, mechanically speaking, there's no reason to think that.
No, that was my argument why I kept trying to throw the La Sombra to my right, Danielle, under the bus. It was, come on, she's a La Sombra.
Because you were a dirty Sabbat infiltrator.
Yeah, so I was called out very early on as a Sabbat, I would say, about by turn three, and it was mostly because of Danielle's constantly imploring, look at how smug he is. There's no way he's not Sabbat. And she was right. But the thing is, so Michelle, who was playing the Nosferatu within the Sabbat, she and I kind of got outed around the same time, and this left one other, and this was one of the fans who was playing the Ravnos, and I have to say that the way they were playing the Ravnos
so good
was so smart, especially for a group that they didn't know, because the way that the player was playing the role was basically asking questions, constantly about the rules, double checking things, acting as if they just didn't get it, didn't get when to play powers, didn't get where to put prestige, constantly asking other known Camarilla players for help on what they should do. But was actually Sabbat.
Yes.
And so it wasn't until about the last turn that they were also outed. The Sabbat lost. But it was an eloquent show of table.
It was blurred down to like the turn of the last couple of cards before we knew which way the game was going to go. It was very, very tight.
Yeah. Yeah, the last turn we were one card away from Sabbat victory, 1 point away from Camarilla victory.
That's awesome.
Yes.
I love it when games end like that, or like, I mean, I feel the same way about sports. Like, if I watch sports and it like doesn't come down to the wire a little bit, I'm like, this is boring. This game's boring. Like, no one wants to see somebody get, you know, shut out.
No.
So like, I find that I get the same excitement from a card or board game that does that as I do from like that watching football or whatever. Because one of the things that one of the mechanics that I've played with in games was having like a time counter. But that could also randomly change, you know, and get screwed up because of something you did. And it's like, oh no.
You mentioned you had played a couple of Time Stories, didn't you?
Yeah, I love Time Stories.
Now, obviously, this isn't an Onyx Path product, but I've mentioned it on a couple of episodes way back.
Yep.
And obviously, Dixie's now played it, and Eddie's played it as well. And yeah, it is one of those.
I've only played two stories so far, but yeah.
Don't worry, I won't spoil anything. I think I spoiled enough at the convention to Neil. But I find that Time Stories is one of those fantastic games that feels like it's always on the edge of failure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Or sometimes you actually fail.
Yeah.
You have to go back and be like, what did I do wrong?
Yeah, that it is possible to fail absolutely in some scenarios of time stories, but most of the time it just lowers your points to the point of getting to the end and feeling like you're awful.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. It's really, really great when you get to the end and it's like you have, you know, 20 of 85 available points and you should go through remedial agent training.
Yeah.
And you're like,
and yet it still feels better than getting to the end of the Sherlock Holmes consulting detective game and Sherlock saying, what's wrong with you? You some kind of idiot. You only scored 20 points. I scored 150. You oaf.
Consulting detective.
He doesn't actually say that. It's just between
lines. It's just implied, yeah.
Yeah, he never says to you, the player, how could you not understand that this clue was so simple? He uses Watson as his ersatz player.
Right, because at the end he says,
but Holmes, I don't understand.
Yeah, right, at the end, basically, Holmes goes through his rationale, and then at the very, very, very end of the book, it says, you know, Holmes made these deductions in 5 decisions, and you've done like 30 of them. And it's just like, oh, come on. There's no way you got from that point to that point, you know?
Yeah. No, I've definitely played Time Stories with other folks. We definitely like just gone in the exact wrong direction for a very long time. I think the first time that I did the Asylum one, we just did not go the right way in the beginning.
Oh, did you take the underground route?
No, we went like outside.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, there's.
Like, yeah, and like didn't like we didn't investigate all the rooms in the asylum before we left.
Oh right,
and
yeah.
So, once we got near the end, we didn't have, like, items that we needed to, unlock stuff. We were like, this is bad. And, like, I'm a puzzle person, and the person I usually play them with is not a puzzle person. So I always end up being the one afterwards who's, like, you know, staring at the whatever the final puzzle is for a good 10 minutes, going, like, I can do this.
Right.
I got this. But yeah, so
there's
fun.
I guess we shouldn't labor the game too much, but there is a fantastic point in Time Stories in the first scenario, so this isn't going to be spoiling too much. And I won't tell you how to get there, but you can, part of your objective in the first scenario of Asylum, the first scenario, which is called Asylum for Time Stories, is to fix an anomaly in time. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what that anomaly is, you just know it's an anomaly. And what happens is your personalities get cast into inmates of this asylum.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take a path in the asylum that basically leads to you escaping the asylum grounds mm-hmm. and sort of running free. And if you do that, you are basically punished massively because you're at that point reminded. And it's quite a lengthy, arduous process to get to the point of escape. You right. get there, you think, wow, I've accomplished this. And then Bob, your handler back at the base, says, what the hell are you doing? We aren't sending you there to release inmates into the wild. We're right. sending you there to fix a time anomaly. You've clearly got the wrong idea about this game. And it's very easy how you can fall into that trap. You can just think, okay, we're trapped in an asylum. What have we got to do? Escape, not fix the anomaly.
Right. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. And yeah, it is easy to fall into that trap. I did it with that one, and I think you definitely made a poor decision in another one that led to screwing up a whole bunch of stuff in the real world, according to the events of the
time stories, so, the game of poor decisions.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, cool. So is there anything else, like company-wise, Onyx Pathwise, that you're looking forward to in the coming year? I know we can't talk about too much, you know, business stuff or the summit too much, but did anything come out of the summit that you're really excited about?
We've been talking about it a little bit, but I mean, I'm excited about the fact that we're talking more seriously about things like partnering with more streamers, partnering with more actual play people, Matthew doing more video stuff, you know, just talking about our games in ways that we haven't done before. I'm really excited about that, honestly. The Pathcast is kind of the first dip of the toe into that pool, as it were. And I love the Pathcast, and we'll do it for a million years or until we get bored with it and stop. One of the two.
Lily, did you just a million, commit
million
us
years?
To that
yes. You have now? To live now for a million years. I'm sorry.
I mean, no, because if you don't put the "you're not going to age" clause into that, then it just is the worst part. Thing.
Damn. All right, well, then we'll do this until we're dead. How about that? Is that better?
Okay.
No.
Great.
I enjoy doing this, but it's also, you know, doing more stuff like with, you know, we're talking about doing things on YouTube, doing things on Twitch or whatever. Now, we haven't committed to anything yet, but the fact that we're exploring these and we have some people that are excited to work with us on this stuff is really, really cool, because that is a whole new way of getting people excited about games. Because, I mean, we talked even this Pathcast, it's like, you know, it's one thing to read the books, it's another thing to play them, but there's also kind of a intersection of, I can't find people to play with, but I can watch people playing the games or you know, having a detailed dive into the games and get a better sense of what the game's about than just reading a book or glancing at a webpage online. So being able to do that is really cool. And even the deep dives we do, I think, are another piece of that. So I'm really excited that we're going to try to move into that a bit more.
Awesome. Matthew, do you have anything that you're really looking forward to?
Well, majority for me is the idea of us getting more visibility. And so that comes through the streaming, it comes through the actual plays, it comes through this podcast growing its audience, and our books being marketed. And they are, of course, being marketed right now, but one of the big things we are aiming for in 2019 is greater visibility in retail. And I think I may have mentioned it last week, and if not, well, if I did, apologies for repetition. There's a difference between just sending a book to a shop and getting it put on a store without any fanfare and marketing right. it to retail. And one of the things we aim to do in 2019 is have retailers more aware of our products so that customers can become more aware of our products. And I know something you mentioned last week, Dixie, was your excitement that Changeling the Lost has a barcode.
Yeah, right. It was because, really cool.
Yeah, and it does. I've got my copy now, and it does feel exciting because while there is nothing, I guess, invalid about the print-on-demand model, and it's served us incredibly well and will continue to serve us incredibly well, I have no doubt. The idea of being on store shelves and ideally the people that work in those stores knowing about those games, knowing enough about those games to tell customers about them, is something that's very exciting to me. One other thing is the UK Games Expo.
Yeah.
Again, nothing set in stone yet, but it is certainly our intention to have a presence at the UK Games Expo this year. Matt McElroy and I and Steffi Devan were there last year too, but we want a slightly larger presence there this year. That may involve setting up a booth and selling books. It will certainly involve running games and maybe even hosting some seminars.
Right, but, and I know I've been talking to Matt... and we're talking about maybe me splitting costs to come out to UK Game Expo as well, so...
Oh, damn it, not you.
I have been campaigning to go to this thing for a solid 6 months now, and no one's talking to me about
In this case, it's the case of Pugsteady's willing to pay, i.e. me, paying half the cost to come out there kind of thing, so...
I got money. I got a $600 flight voucher.
Well, talk to Matt.
Pitch him. I would be more than happy to welcome you to this green and pleasant land.
Oh, you welcome her to this green and pleasant land, but not me. I see how this goes.
Well, you've been here recently, Eddie, and, you know.
It's true.
Frankly, we've had enough.
it's not us, it's you.
No, if both of you can make it, you know, that would make my convention, that's for sure.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I'll have to look into it. Hmm. You know, it's talking to me about it. I'm a person. I have money. Anyway. saltiness aside. the thing I was going to mention when it came back around to me was the retail thing as well. So, yeah, I think it's really awesome that we're trying to get so many of our books into stores now. And that we're, you know... So I used to work at a comic shop, which, you know, most of our listeners know, and I remember being really excited when I was still, like, you know, just freelance editing for Onyx Path, the first time that the ACD or whatever, like, catalog came in, and Pugmire was there under Studio 2, and it said, like, Onyx Path Publishing. And I was like, what? Like, that's awesome. Like, I worked on this book, and now it's in this catalog. Mm-hmm. And just thinking about having more and more of our games in those sorts of distribution catalogs and having more eyes on them. I know that one of the reasons that my old game store I worked at that we didn't order Onyx Path products was because the boss just wasn't into doing the Kickstarter, the POD thing. Like, if you couldn't get it through ACD or Alliance, he didn't want it on the shelf.
Right.
Which, granted... Older gentleman, old-fashioned, whatever. The games manager would have happily been, you know, supporting all the Kickstarters. But I think also we got burned in a couple of Kickstarters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being able to just do it just like the same way that you order your D&D books is amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very excited about that.
If you're listening to this and you do want to see our books in your stores, the simplest thing you can do is speak to your game store and ask them to place an order, or suggest that they do. Obviously, a lot of stores are only going to order to demand, as it were. So if you order one, they'll order one, and then they'll sell it to you, and that'll be that. But some stores are happy to order a few at a time, and they may get discounts on doing so. We, via Studio 2, who act as a lot wider distributor, have access to companies like Svedium and other distributors that distribute to retail. Therefore, our books are appearing in those catalogs as time goes on. And if there's a particular book of ours that you want to see in store, you can but ask, and you should be able to find anything by Onyx Path in those catalogs.
Yeah, actually, I think we should probably even get Matt on this Pathcast to just talk about retail, because he's been doing a ton of work the past several years to try and make this happen. So he definitely has a wealth of knowledge about how retail works, why we're making decisions we're making, best way to go about stuff. So yeah, I think we should definitely try getting him on for an interview. Just talk about that alone would be fantastic.
I think Matt, too, is one of the people that outsiders, like folks that, you know, don't work with us. A lot of people probably don't even know what he does exactly.
Right. What is operations?
So it'd be cool to kind of define that. Yeah, because it's like, yeah, he's our operations manager, but like he's also, you know, he does his convention reports and everything. But it's like, what is a day in the life of, you know, Matt McElroy?
Yeah.
Would be kind of a fun talking about. So, well, we're getting close to time. Unfortunately, I know usually we go like an hour. But because we had that 20 minutes that got lost, we're going to have to wrap it up here in a second, because Eddie is terrible.
I am terrible. I'm the literal worst.
So I want everybody, as we sign off, to say one thing that they thought was cool at Midwinter that is not game related. So, Eddie, where can people find you, and what is your thing?
My thing was, it's going to be sappy, but I don't care. Being able to go to a con again with my wife, Michelle. It's been a few years since we've just been able to go and hang out and spend time both with our friends and our kind of family of choice. And Midwinter is where a lot of those people showed up. So it was just really, really nice to spend a couple of days with her doing stuff that we love, because we just haven't had to, either I've been doing it for work or she's been busy with other things.
Yeah. So she was lovely too. I loved, like, once again, I think I met her 10 years ago briefly, mm-hmm. but I loved actually getting to meet her and talk to her, because we had some really interesting conversations that weren't at all about games.
She was very happy to meet both of you. She just spent a lot of time talking about how great my coworkers are. And it's like, cool, so you can go hang out with them and leave me be. And she's like, no, I like you too, I guess.
And where can folks find you, Polly?
If you want to talk to me about my wife, it's... you can find me on Twitter at EDDYFATE, Eddie Fate, on Facebook at Eddie Webb Writer. Or if you want to find my business stuff, you can follow me at various places at Pugsteady.
Awesome. Matthew, what is your thing?
So this is going to sound very odd. It's very much a Michelle Lovin. but it's I guess, extension from that. Michelle and I had a good opportunity. I think we spoke for about 4 hours and I didn't even get up from the table. She's that engaging. And we spoke quite a lot about training. And this is a very odd thing for me to say I enjoyed about Midwinter, because there was so much that I enjoyed about it. The hotel, the food, the people, the atmosphere, all of that was fantastic. But as I've mentioned before, I used to be a professional trainer. And it's a very similar role to what Michelle does these days. Mm-hmm. And so being able to speak about that kind of thing after not having really done it professionally for over a year was somehow refreshing, you know, because sometimes you can feel utterly burned out, especially by a previous job, and you just don't want to talk about it again. But
right.
Talking about training techniques, specifically learning techniques, and just the different methods we apply, it's interesting, always interesting to observe how many of those things you carry over from job to job. Although I may not be a professional trainer anymore, I know that I still use some of those skills in developing books and managing projects and things like that. And the extension from that is, as mentioned in last week's podcast, I did one of these simple personality tests for the Onyx Path crew in our summit to identify what kind of role each of us occupies in the Onyx Path group. And going back into that it was like riding a bike. It mm-hmm. was fun to get back into that mold and quite reassuring to me to tell me that, oh, well, you can still do this then. Because I've got to be honest, I was nervous. I was anxious before I did that.
Really?
Because it's been over a year since I've ran a single course. And yeah, it was like reuniting with an old friend.
Good.
To get the training material out and talk to people about what it meant, that sort of thing. So, that was it for me. And you can find me on Twitter, on Clack Click Bang. You can find me on the Onyx Path forum as The Gentleman Gamer. And you can find me on YouTube, both on my channel, The Gentleman Gamer, and on The Onyx Path's channel as The Gentleman Gamer. This week has been full of interviews from Midwinter with my lovely co-hosts, as well as Megan Fitzgerald, Neil Raymond Price, and Daniel Lauzon. And next week, we will be returning a little to form. I've got a Scion recap to put up. I've got some They Came From Guides to Monsters. Lots of fun to come.
Awesome. Yeah, there's so much coming out soon and things that you're talking about. So I'm going to say my two things, because I have two things. One is very small. And first of all, that is that Millie is the doggy canine concierge at the Hilton, and she is delightful.
She's the best.
And you should follow Millie at the Hilton on Instagram.
Yes.
Because she has an Instagram and she's adorable. My favorite thing that was not a game thing was actually probably the court brunch that we did. You will notice if you watch Matthew's videos that a lot of us are very dressed up. Megan has a fun hat. It's great. And that's because a bunch of us that are, you know, Changing the Lost fans, and also just a bunch of us that work in the industry, all kind of refer to ourselves as nicknames, as like Summer Queen, Winter Queen, Spring Queen, etc. And because there's multiple courts, you can have more than one, like Autumn Queen, Winter Queen, so no one thinks that like I'm the only one, you know, whatever. I got everybody together. We went and had a lovely brunch off-site. And it was just a lot of fun. We were all like kind of crammed into one of those like C-shaped booths, mm-hmm. like a very large like booth. So it's like a little round table experience. And then we came back. We were just, you know, just having a blast together. And that was really, really nice because a lot of these folks, when you see them at Gen Con or PAX or whatnot, you don't have time to do things like that. Like, you might be able to go grab a drink with them or talk to them later at night, but then you're tired, you know, whatever. Yeah. And just getting to go have brunch with my friends. And, like, we didn't talk about gaming the whole time. You know, we just talked. Mm-hmm. So that was really nice and relaxing for me. I had a couple of really great dinners over the course of midwinter that were not in one of the restaurants there or that were just very chill and weren't work-related. And it's just such a different world from, you know, PAX Unplugged and Gen Con. Yeah. And I like how relaxing it is because you think like a 5-day, 6-day convention, you're going to be fried afterwards. And I was a little tired when I got home, obviously, but it's still a nice con. It's so chill. Like if you want to go to bed at 11 o'clock and sleep until 10, you can, you know, no one's going to stop you. So that was cool. All right. You can find me pretty much everywhere at Dixie Cyanide, and you can find us at theonyxpath.com, The Onyx Path, all over the place. That's pretty much the best way to find us, obviously. Mm-hmm. And as always, many worlds, one Pathcast.